Honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler. Brought to you by this local station and its sponsors. And presented everywhere on the air and online by Paul Everett's RV Country. With 8 locations in 5 western states.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and today's conversation with Ray Ritchie of Clovis, California. He'll turn 93 at the end of July. He never attended high school, but he got quite an education in the Army during World War II. From Omaha Beach on D-Day to the Battle of the Bulge to 6 months of occupation duty guarding German prisoners of war after it all ended. In 2013, when Central Valley Honor Flight took its initial contingent of World War II veterans to Washington, D.C. to see their memorial, Mr. Ritchie was on that flight with his son Richard, a Marine Corps veteran wounded 3 times in Vietnam, serving as his guardian. So here we have father and son, both wounded in action, both of you lost friends in battle. You see the World War II Memorial, the Vietnam Memorial, the Korean War Memorial. You're experiencing all of that with all these other vets and with each other. What did you get out of that experience?
I just didn't realize there was that many people killed. The American Memorial or the Vietnam, that just, have you seen it?
With 58,000 names, yeah.
And then Korea does too. And it just makes you sick to think of all the nice young men that got killed.
And at the World War II Memorial, there aren't any names, but there's a wall of gold stars representing 406,000 Americans who died. So many of them on June 6th, and you were there at Omaha Beach. What did you think of when you took in that sight at the World War II Memorial?
Well, it just brought back memories of what happened.
Did it make you think of some of those friends of yours who died that day?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, they were just young men and 20 years old and just getting started in life. But they never got to live to see what happened.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever thought about how their lives would have turned out? What kind of things they would have done?
Yeah, I've thought about that. I wondered what they would have done. My one buddy, he turned out to be a bartender in Eureka. He died early. And then another buddy lived in Watsonville. He was a plumber and he died early. And then my good buddy in Fresno, his name was Donald Turnipseed. They had a grocery store on 9th and Madison in Fresno. And he got killed in amphibious. We were taking amphibious training and he was driving an amphibious truck and the motor died and a big wave come in and it rolled over and over up on the beach and crushed him. And so I brought him home.
So he died before you guys even crossed the channel.
Yeah.
And when you say you brought him home, you mean when you came home from the war, you came with his body?
No, I went to see his parents and told them about what happened.
Mm. What was that like, having to explain to
them? Well, I'll tell you, it was rough. Because he was a good buddy and a good guy, a good clean-cut guy. But he was about the same age as I was.
Uh-huh.
He had a little better life than I had because his dad and mother had a grocery store and his dad worked for PG&E.
When you think about that, and even maybe there in Washington, D.C., when you're at that World War II memorial and they throw out that number, 406,000, and it's so shocking. You ever think, that could have been me?
Yeah.
My 2 kids, 5 grandkids, 2 great-grandkids wouldn't be
they
here?
They wouldn't be here.
How do you account for that? How do you account for the fact that you did survive?
Just being lucky and strong and healthy and being poor and learning how to live without things.
While you were over there, did you ever catch wind of what was happening in the concentration camps?
No, I never did. But my buddy was in one, Glenn Duncan. He was a tail gunner, and the Germans shot it in two, half in two. And he rode the tail section down, and he broke his leg and his shoulder. And the German women run out there with pots and pans and skillets and beat him up. And they finally took him to the hospital and he got put in a concentration camp. And he was one of the 3 that went in with me. When he come home, he was kind of lost part of it. Mm-hmm. And he was in there for a couple of years. And I went over to see him, and his mother said, well, he's out in the garage. So I went out there, and he jumped out from behind the garage and threw me on the ground. Finally, he realized, and he says, I thought you were a German. Mm-hmm. He and a couple of buddies dug a tunnel, and they got out, but they got captured again the next day and beat up.
Fortunately, he wasn't executed. A lot of them were in those circumstances.
I wanted to be a gunner on one of the planes, either a waist gunner or a tail gunner.
Uh-huh.
And I was too tall, and I couldn't get down in the turret. So I guess I'm pretty lucky that I didn't.
Well, I don't know that anybody was wanting to trade places with you while you were on Omaha Beach on D-Day. But you're right, those bomber crews were in harm's way all the time. And to be clear, that was a prisoner of war camp where the conditions were never kind and accommodating, but those were all the captured Allied prisoners. I don't want any of our listeners to confuse it with the concentration camps where Jewish people and other political prisoners were tortured and executed. But I want to bring you back around to Honor Flight. I know you packed a whole lot into 3 days, a ton of highlights, and you had a huge crowd cheering for you when you came home. But what was the number one moment for you out of that whole experience? What would you say was the most satisfying or fulfilling?
Well, seeing the memorial, you can spend a day there, and it was real pretty. The weather was pretty. I really enjoyed that. Mm. And to top it all off, my son was rolling me in a wheelchair.
Right.
And all of a sudden, he walked off and left me. And I said, hey, you're forgetting something here. And then somebody started rolling me. And it was my grandson. He was stationed in Virginia. He's a master sergeant in the Marines. And he come over there to see me. He started rolling me.
And you didn't know he was coming?
I didn't know he was coming. My son fixed it up. So it was only, a 2 or 3 hour drive from where he was stationed to over there.
Uh-huh.
So he come over there. I got a picture of him up there. He's a master sergeant. He's been in 22 years.
Wow.
He's going to retire next year. But he's been overseas a lot of times.
Well, that's quite a surprise. I wonder how many guys visiting that memorial have a moment like that where their Purple Heart recipient son and their Marine grandson are there with them.
That was really, I thought, what the heck's going on here, you know, because him and I are real good buddies. I kid him all the time about the Marines don't know what they're doing, and the Army does, and he don't much go for that.
Uh-huh. Well, I can tell you're proud of your grandson, and I know you're proud of your son's service in Vietnam. What about for you? When you think back everything that you saw, that you went through, that you experienced, what are you most proud of?
Well, that I got home alive. That's the best part about it. And now I go to the Veterans Hospital. I see all those guys with their legs off and their arms off. And I just think how lucky I was. You know, I was just really lucky. That's all I can say.
It's all about perspective. Somebody may be hearing you talk about getting hurt on D-Day or hurting your hand later or dealing with frozen feet and frozen fingers and trying to work as a contractor in spite of all those handicaps, and yet you say you're the lucky one.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be hard for some other folks to feel sorry for themselves. When June 6th comes up on the calendar every year, does that mean something to you?
Not necessarily. You know, after 75 years, you forget that kind of stuff. But I do think about what if we hadn't won the war, what would happen? Hitler would have been over here, and it had been under his rules.
He had his headquarters all planned out in Los Angeles. Did you know that?
I didn't know that.
They had some American sympathizers who built a big old complex, and it's right by Griffith Park. It's still there. They haven't really changed it. Yeah. I don't want to forget to say thank you. Thank you for serving our country. Thank you for telling us your story. It's pretty remarkable. And it does help us understand what you and those other guys went through. You said you're most proud of coming home. How about what, at almost 93 years old, what are you most thankful for?
Well, being as healthy as I am and having a lot of good friends.
You just threw out there, you think about what if the other side had won, how different things would be. When you think about your grandkids and your great-grandkids and future generations of Americans, what do you think all of us who weren't alive during World War II need to understand about what you guys did?
Well, There's a lot of people your age that could care less about the soldiers. And like one of my grandsons, he said, "Grandpa, you were stupid to go in the Army." You know? And so there's a lot of people out there that don't realize what the soldiers went through to keep the America the way it is.
Yeah.
And I'm afraid the people we have running for president is going to mess things up, you know.
You're not alone.
There's a lady here in Clovis, a friend of mine.
Yeah.
She's from France.
Uh-huh.
And she tells everybody, "You guys be good to Ray because he liberated France." She's from France.
Uh-huh.
And she tells everybody, "You guys be good to Ray because he liberated France." I said, "Yeah, man, about 15,000 other guys."
Were there ever any funny things that happened while you were overseas in the war that you think back on and chuckle a little bit?
We had, if you got caught fraternizing with the German girls, you got put in stockade.
Right.
And so, because you might be telling them something you're not supposed to tell them.
Sure.
And so, me and my buddy would sneak under the fence, and we would go down, and there was five girls living in a house. And so, we would go down and see them at night, and get back by 12 o'clock so we go for bed check. And so I always volunteer for things. And one night the battery commander says, "Richie, get four guys and we're going to check all the houses and make sure there's no Germans." And so the first house we went to was that one. And one of the girls had a little baby, and my buddy's name was Brown, and she says, "Here, Brown, hold the baby."
Uh-oh.
The battery commander looked at me, and I looked at him. He said, "Brown, come to my office when we get back."
At least he didn't say Richie.
They didn't mention my name, and I was sure glad.
Well, I'm sure glad we've been able to share your name and your story with our listeners today. That's Ray Richie of Clovis, California. Check out the photos and a short video at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. And while you're there, look for the link to the Honor Flight Network. I know I talk about this a lot on Hometown Heroes, but I don't know if there's anything happening right now that's better for our aging veterans to experience. I was just part of another homecoming celebration a little over a week ago, and every single time, I'm reminded of just how powerful this experience is, not just for our veterans, but for the guardians who go with them, for their families, for people from all walks of life who come together to celebrate those who have put their lives on the line for our freedom. The website is honorflight.org, and that can connect you to hubs all over the country. Wherever you're listening today, there are volunteers devoting their time, talents, and treasure to making sure that all surviving World War II veterans who want to see their memorial not only have that opportunity, but end up with a life-changing, life-affirming, and in some cases, life-defining experience. We're out of time for now. I'm Paul Leffler, hoping you'll join us again for our next edition of Hometown Heroes, when we're reminded again through the stories of our veterans that freedom is not free.